Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
You're on with the Due Time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in. So, where were you yesterday? Oh, we started off yesterday shaking the Monday morning blues with our Due Time group. And the stories were quite interesting. We started talking about the New York City subway rider who I would like to say he was having a ball with the ladies and their dresses. Yes, one 23-year-old woman turned around, going up the steps to only find that she had a camera, a phone, up her dress, taking pictures. You know, you ladies have to really be careful going up them steps, because I tell you, you have no idea what people are doing. Can you imagine how many shots he's gotten? Yeah, but unfortunately, they did not catch the bandit as he ran off into the sunset of the train system. And we talked about the team also riding the subway, but unfortunately, on the top of the train. Yes, and you believe that subway surfing is back? Well, I would like to think that, somebody just saw this ad, but newspaper article, and they decided that that's not for them. Yeah. He was riding on top of the 7 train and hit some, something up there. And head was bleeding profusely. And how God protected him, where they were able to take him down off the train. He did not fall off the top of the train. Yes. So God has really, really, really watched over him. And then we hope that he is well and fine and will never do not only that, but anything like it. Okay? And Mayor Adams was on our chat list yesterday morning, as he, you know, all of a sudden just woke up one day and realized that it's bad. Yes, we're still talking about that subway system. All of a sudden, he decided he was going to ride this train overnight for 3 hours. Not overnight, 3 hours. And he was, you know, decked out in his police department cap. He had on his windbreaker that had, I guess, the City of New York emblem on it, and the other side had Eric Adams, mayor, and decided to take a ride, you know, in the subway system and realize how bad it was. And I did ask yesterday, and I'll ask again this morning, well, where were you? where have you been? And, you know, he was after 3 or 4 weeks of being in office in January, he realized at that time that the city, you know, it just had this nice, good shell around it. But in actuality, when you crack the shell, the content, what was on the inside was bad. Now, for a native New Yorker, again, I ask, where have you been? Because this city has never had a good shell and has been bad inside. Now, it may not be the worst city in the world, but we've had our share of problems throughout my 65 years of living here. And he's older than I am, so he has seen even harder times here in New York than I have seen. And, you know, for you to campaign to be the mayor in a city that you really knew nothing about, shame on you. Shame on you. Because in my opinion, that's what he's saying. He's saying that, you know, he had no idea of how bad it was, and, you know, the mayor before him had a one-track mind and was concentrating on his legacy. And I don't want to hear about the mayor before you. We all know that, you know, you have to, whenever you take over a new job, you got to do cleanup. You got to clean up somebody else's, you know, work and lack thereof and, you know, mess possibly. You know, that's not, you know, something that, you know, nobody expected or anyone expected that you know, should have been able to come in here and, you know, and everything was perfect. Because he had just come in, you know, in the season of the pandemic, and, you know, it was a bad time to really take over New York City. However, for you to literally say that it's bad is like, you know, you just came in from another state. You really don't know nothing about this state. You never really lived in this state. And, you know, I took great offense to him going down into the train system to ride these trains for these little 3 hours and declare it's bad without you really getting a true, honest train experience. That's right. You know, the lady who was pushed on the track, the other man who was attacked, the other lady who was attacked. How many people have been pushed on a train in these last 6 months? Or on the track, rather. So my thing is, go on down there, just like we do. Don't go down there with no detail swarming you. Don't go down there with the lights, camera, and action. Don't go down there dressed up in your life jacket and cap and letting people know who you are. Go down there with your mask on so nobody can see your face. Go down there with a regular baseball cap and a t-shirt, your jeans and sneakers, and get it on. Yep. Get in that train that's nasty or vacant because the one homeless person has smelled it up so bad. You know, as Pastor K.L. said, you know, when the bum sat next to him and gave him a hug. Yeah. You know, go ahead down there. Go visit Rikers Island. As a civilian, when you couldn't even have a pin in your hair. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Went to visit someone one time and they made us take the pins out of our hair. Yep. Go ahead, live life as a New Yorker does and then come back and tell me how good or bad it really is. You know, you wait on that bus, you know, out here in Jamaica, where the 6th bus, by the time it gets to where we are, you know, it's standing room only, and they can't even stop. And you've been waiting there for 20 minutes. Yeah, come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Go hang on down there in Harlem. Yeah, do your thing. Do your thing. Okay? All right. So, you know, once you get the real experience, then you can really say whether it's bad or good. Because, like I said, you know, as a New Yorker, native New Yorker, you know, I've spent all my life here. And, you know, I've had my experiences. And then on the flip side, I have not, in comparison to other people. You know what other people have endured. You know, I'm an accessorized individual. I can't tell you the last time I took a plane. I can't tell you the last time I took a plane. First of all, I can't do that. You know, and I remember when I couldn't, you know, do the steps in the beginning, and I had to take those elevators in the train. Come on, do the thing if you're going to do it. See how long it takes to get on the elevator in a train station, and then you're scared. And you're looking around, and you hoping that 4 or 5 other, you know, women, you know, people ride there. You know, man, you couldn't pay me to get on a train these days. You know, come on. You know, pay your fare. You know, it's so, come on, if you're going to live, then live. If you're going to, you know, talk about it, then talk about it. I honestly think that, you know, for a position such as, you know, New York City mayor or any mayor of any, you know, place that you really need, or any political office, you really need to know what you're talking about. You really need to know what these people are experiencing. So, you know, I ain't trying to hear from him right now. I ain't trying to hear from him. Well, today is Let's Talk About It Tuesday, Church Folk Day. We got a chatter going on, and man, I got some news. I got some news. I mean, it may not be the most exciting news. It may not be the most craziest news, but it's something to talk about today. So, you know, I'm geared up, and I'm ready to talk. And I hope you're ready to listen and chat back, you know, with me. I'm looking forward to spending the morning with you. And let's make sure we can make this happen together. So go get that healthy breakfast. Go tell somebody that it's due time with Pastor Steph is on. And make sure you go nowhere, because we'll be right back.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Good morning, good morning, and good morning to you. Welcome to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. And it's Let's Talk About It Tuesday, Church Folk Day. And I was just surveying my little news articles, and oh, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know where to start. But how are you today? All right, Pastor Sharman, I need you to make sure you got your talk on. I need you to make sure you get, you know, get that crud out your eyes. Go ahead to the bathroom, do a couple of jumping jacks. You know, whatever it is you need to do to make sure you give me a hearty good morning this morning. Because man, oh man, oh man, we got stuff to talk about. And I need you and Pastor KL and I guess Shanti's today if Pastor Ed don't show up. And we ain't got our girl Tamika on. So we got some stuff to talk about. Well, now, my first story, where did he go? Here we go. You know, now, I am the type of girl that loves extra mayo on her hero. Yes. I can't eat because it got eggs in it. So I get real upset. I haven't been to a Subway in so long because I can't have the mayo the way I want to. But when I did get, you know, a sandwich and it just didn't have enough mayo on it, you know, I just kindly asked, you know, can you put a little more mayo on here for me? Well, out in Atlanta, I guess it's not, you know, polite to ask, you know, for the modification on your sandwich. Because they say an Atlanta Subway employee was killed and another employee was injured when a customer opened fire because, or, you know, they said opened fire because there was too much mayonnaise on his sandwich. Now, I keep telling you, we will never have to find anything to talk about as long as we got the news in front of us. So they say at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, there was a 26-year-old female worker in the Subway restaurant, if you will, and another 24-year-old female employee, and they was attacked by a gentleman who they say was kind of like a normal customer. Yeah, he wasn't really somebody they didn't even know. They said they knew his face. They had serviced him before. And he came in to the store, they say, and he told them that he was unhappy with his sandwich. And they were, you know, kind of, like, they didn't expect anything because, again, he had been in the shop before. They say without incident. But this time he argued with the staff over his sandwich. And then he pulled out his gun and he just began shooting. And a manager returned fire. And unfortunately, both Subway workers were shot. The two young ladies, 26 and 24 years old, were shot. They were transported to the hospital, but unfortunately, one didn't even make it. And it, you know, and these are our babies. You know what I'm saying? At 26 and 24 years old, you know, yes, you know, they're adults, but they're just starting their life. You know, and they got their little Subway job, you know what I'm saying? You know, maybe going to school. And this is their little part-time job to, you know, help them keep a little, you know, a couple of dollars in their pocket. And this is what's happening to them. And, you know, my heart just goes out because I have a 24-year-old daughter. And, you know, she worked in a fast food restaurant for a nice amount of time. And she was in one of the rough ones. Shanti's always calls it the Compton branch or location, if you will, because the clientele that went in and out of this store, you know, this restaurant, you know, I was like, Lord, get her off that avenue, you know. But, you know, she managed and she did well. And, you know, thank God for protection, because, you know, this is what our young people, you know. I remember having my little job. Well, let me finish that. I hate when people do that. This is what our young people are facing these days. You know, we didn't have to worry about that when we were, you know, getting our little job for the first time. We've been working Burger King, McDonald's, and, you know, little drugstores, and, you know, wherever we worked when we were growing up and we were kids, you know, or young people. And, you know, we didn't have to worry about somebody coming in the store and shooting up the restaurant or, you know, we didn't have to worry about stuff like that. You know, if anything, they came in, they may have yelled or cussed or, you know. And I've worked at McDonald's a couple times, and I've worked in the city, you know, and it was popular, it was crowded, it was busy. And I remember working like late at night at one time, and, you know, I would listen. I mean, I was young, and I used to have to take the train. There was one time I worked at McDonald's, and I had to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I lived in the Bronx, upper Bronx, and we lived nowhere near the train station. You had to get up early in the morning and walk to the train station and wait on that platform. And, you know, so that's why I said, you know, as a native New Yorker, I know what it's like to have to, you know, really get out here and mess with other New Yorkers that, you know, weren't ratty type. But we just didn't have to worry about stuff like this. You know, 26 and 24 years old, you know, they have their little jobs. And now, because somebody is unhappy because you put too much mayonnaise on their sandwich, you're shot and killed. You know, it's like the other young lady who worked in the Burger King, you know, in Harlem, you know, and a disgruntled ex-employee, you know. We didn't have to worry about these things. And, you know, I tell you, you have to really cover your family in prayer, because it's, you know, even talking about it now, it's like I have tears in my eyes, because I think about what they're up against now. And we just didn't have those things to consider. We didn't have those things that we had to think about. You know, we just got up, we went to work, and we called it a day. And to think that, you know, they can't even do that, you know, without wearing a bulletproof vest, or, you know, you're in a subway, you're in a sandwich shop, and you can't even get up and do your shift and go home. You know, it's so sad. It is so sad. Yeah, okay, so on the lighter side, if you will. So, you know, I've had my plane experiences. I got a couple of stories about the plane this morning. And talking about crazy, you definitely don't want to find a crazy in the air. I tell you, you know, I love to travel, and I love the plane experience. I do. As crazy as it is, you know, I hate going. No, I love it. I love checking in. I love dragging your luggage. I love getting on board. I love everything. I do, except for when they change my seat and put me in the back. I don't like that, but I love traveling, and you definitely don't want to meet a crazy of any sort in an airport on a plane. And the Southwest airline passengers, they met a lighter side of crazy. So there was this man who they say airdropped a sexually explicit photo to all the passengers on the plane. So for those of us who don't understand what AirDrop is, it's an iPhone capability that they put. So what happens is a lot of times when you have a file or a picture or a video that's too big to send via email or text, it's called AirDrop. So you open up your phone, the other person opens up their phone, and it speaks to, you know, the other phone, and, you know, before you know it, you've got that video or that picture. So, when you're on the airplane, you open your phone. You know, your phone is open when you get on the plane, more than likely, because you might be calling somebody, or you just haven't turned off your phone until, you know, somebody reminds you to turn off your phone. So somehow or another, you know, the languages were spoken, and he downloads this picture into the phone, and somebody saw it happen. And that's the interesting part, because somebody on the plane saw him do it, and they they reported him. And let me tell you, they were not playing. They contacted whoever they needed to contact. And lo and behold, by the time he got off that plane, the FBI was waiting for his butt. Yep. They said, I saw his iPad had AirDrop open, so I knew it was him. And yes, I sure did make a scene. And they really made sure he did not get away with this. And they said he AirDropped the photo, then opened the phone again and had some really explicit stuff. I mean, really explicit stuff that was on his phone. And they said even a kid was sitting behind him and could possibly see. I don't know, because the seats are pretty high, so I don't know how true that is. But, you know, in other words, you know, you got the sexually explicit stuff open and you got kids around. That's pretty much what they're saying. But, yeah, they definitely arrested him. And they're taking all of this stuff a little more seriously now, because I guess, you know, especially when you mention kids are around and things like that, yeah, they're trying to prove a whole lot of points, and he was not expecting that. When he got off the plane, they were patting their feet, waiting for him. So, you know, just beware of what's on your phone, you know, when you're traveling into somebody else's doing stuff like this, you know, and, you know, somebody else might say, well, you know, if you can get it, somebody else can pull stuff off your phone. I don't know about that. However, I do know that this just proves that without them even knowing, you know, I guess, you know, because I would think that, you know, okay, so I'm standing next to Shantice, you know, somehow or another she's got to know my email or address or something, or my iMessage, you know, my, you know, whatever's connected to your phone. So this Apple has got to definitely do some work, because if somebody can just AirDrop a picture into your multiple phones, we ain't talking about just no one phone. He didn't have all these people's email addresses. So I don't know how, you know, if somebody knows how something like that could be done, hit us up, 347-285-7777. Let us know how things like that can happen, because I can't imagine not having your personal phone information, but is still able to communicate with your phone. I don't know. Well, I tell you, I had a couple of stories off the plane. Check this out. There's an ex-flight attendant who says you might not want to use the toilet paper on board. Now, when I saw the headline, immediately my mind was racing because I don't like to use the bathroom on the airplane. I hate it. It's just way too small. And I remember getting sick when we traveled last year, and I had no other choice. And man, I hated being in that bathroom. I hated it. And I make sure I go to the bathroom 15 times, like layovers and things like that. That's why I don't even care about layovers. That gives me a chance to go to the bathroom. And I couldn't think of what she could have been talking about. So here's what she said. She says that you may not want to use the bathroom on the airplane, because when the little boys are in the bathroom and they're taking a little, you know, tinkle-winkle, and there's turbulence, the little thing goes shooting all over the place. And possibly on the toilet paper. And I was like, oh, gosh. Well, generally, I kind of pull off any public. I was pulled for, and then throw that away, and then I don't use the first, you know, the first few sheets. But just to think that this could be going on, and most times I always got tissue in my pocket. So, you know, I try to use my own tissue. But there were just these are that things that you talk about. You're looking at it, and it looks clean. And, yeah, you know, you may take those first sheets off or whatever. But think about all the people who don't. Think about all the people who don't even consider doing stuff like that. Because when I read the headline, I just couldn't imagine. I was trying to think of all the possibilities, all the things that she could have been talking about, all the things that she could be referring to. And I just would not have come up with that one. And that was not the thought. And she says, you know, use the tissue paper opposed to the toilet paper, because the tissue paper is up higher. And she also gave another little caveat. And she said, now if you're in the bathroom and you have to do a number two, make sure that if you want that done in private, the door might be closed, but try to go when they're busy, because being that it's like right where they sit, they know because they hear. Now, I don't know what you are doing outside of the bathroom, because I can't imagine hearing, you know, what's going on in the bathroom. That's not like a regular toilet where it's like toilet water and you hear like, coop, 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 you know, come on. Well, I ain't being graphic. I'm just being, you know, realistic. That's what happens. So being that that doesn't happen because there's, you know, it's like that hole that it goes down. It's like that water floating. Then my thing is, then how y'all hearing all of this? Y'all need to be busy. Should I have to wait for you to be busy before I have to go, like I can time it or something like that? You know, for those who have to, you know, do things like that. You know, because I remember, I think it was that same time I got sick, that we couldn't even pull off. Yeah, we were held up because some guy was in the bathroom. Now, I don't know what he was doing in there. He could have been sick or whatever, because I remember when I did an article and it told us don't eat certain things in the airport because it will send you to the bathroom and you may have to use the bathroom on the airplane. And my thing is, okay, y'all hearing what? But that's what she advised. You know, if you're a private person and you really care, you know, what people hear and things like that, you know, don't go while they're not busy. Wait until they either serve them drinks or, you know, collecting the garbage or whatever they do, that they're not sitting over there in that little corner that they got, so that, you know, you don't have your privacy, you know, kind of breached. So I just thought I'd give y'all, you know, thinking that people are traveling these days, you know? Oh, my goodness gracious. What else are we talking about this morning? All right. So, I'm giving you the lighter. There's some funny stuff this morning. There are things that it doesn't, you know, I'm always giving y'all the killer news. And I'll give you that in a minute. Something more serious. Okay. So, there's this news story about these two young ladies, and I was trying to see their ages because looking at the pictures, they're pretty young. They look like they couldn't be no more than about 30, if they're even that old. And they're dated. And you can see that one is, they look exactly alike too. They look a lot alike. Because initially when I looked at the picture, I thought they were sisters. And you could tell one is a little harder than the other. And their story is that they've been dating for a couple of years. And somehow or another, Carly and Mercedes found out that their mother, now I'm confused. Anyway, let me just tell the story. Maybe it'll make sense in a minute. Because I had the story and it made sense, but now it don't make sense. Okay. So they said they found out their mothers had relations with the same man. Okay. It makes sense. Okay, why am I confused? Yeah. So their mothers, Carly's mother and Mercedes' mother, had relations with the same man. So now they realize that they may be half-sisters. So normal people would say, okay, you know what, we're half-sisters, possibly. Let's, you know, pump our brakes and take this DNA test and find out, you know, and then if so, then we're going to go our separate way, you know, and we'll just, you know, thank God we're not a man and a woman where we can make kids. Not these two. Nope. That didn't stop them at all. They actually went on TikTok and they actually asked everybody, should they get a DNA test? And the people were like, yeah. What's the matter with you? And they said, if we're actually related, is it wrong to stay together? See, you see what I'm talking about? See what I'm talking about? When I say this world is just going to hell in a handbasket, as they say, why would that even be a consideration? So needless to say, the TikTokers, came back with, like, I'm sorry, this is a no-brainer here. And, you know, even for comments like, I think the real risk would be not getting the DNA test. And one of the responses was, that could explain why you two look like sisters. I'm telling you, these two look exactly alike. The only thing is one's face is a little heavier and her hair is cut shorter. And it's not short, but it's shorter than the other one. And she looks a little harder. So you could tell who's playing which role in the relationship. And this is really a dilemma for them. You could not be in that kind of love, y'all. Stop. Just stop. Just cut it out already. What kind of love could the two of y'all be in that you wouldn't even want to know that you are really sisters, partially, if you will, and we would just not, this would just not be, you know, something that you go forward with. Why is this a dilemma? because this world is twisted. They really went on TikTok asking, should we get a DNA test? And it wasn't where, you know, this was just a question of, you know, asking opinions because they just want to know and they just want to share the story. This is really a dilemma for them. And again, I think most of it is probably coming from the fact that they're two women. And they're like, well, then what's the big risk? What is the biggest risk here if we stay together? We ain't Christian. It ain't forbidden. You know what I'm saying? Whatever is forbidden, Nathan already did. So ain't no big deal. And I'm looking at this article, and I'm like, are y'all serious? Just the thought of you possibly being related should just end all of your, you know, all of your dating, you know, continuing to date should be out of the question. Okay, y'all. So I got two more stories to talk about. And then we'll get to talking to our due time crew. So there's this couple. She's 21. She's a Mexican singer. And he's 79. And they're in a restaurant. And they're arguing because she wants to divorce him. And he shoots her dead. And when they go back and they look at her divorce papers, in the divorce papers, she has pictures of bruises on her face. There are a number of domestic violence incidences. And that's what they use as evidence for the divorce proceedings. So I don't know what was the point of them, you know, meeting and, you know, getting to this, going to this restaurant together. But he had threatened her already. This is, you know, we were talking about this last week, you know, with the gentleman. And, you know, Pastor KL brought up, you know, if they tell you who they are, believe them. And this is why I wanted to bring this up again, because this kind of, you know, gives a stamp on what we were talking about on Friday when I said, listen, don't walk on. In the divorce papers, she had evidence of his domestic violence. She had the police reports in there. She had where he had threatened her with a gun on another occasion. Why are we going to lunch, dinner, breakfast, or anything together? Here you are, 80 years old. They don't say how long they've been married in this article. But you are 80 years old, and I got to worry about you abusing me, and I'm 21. Now, he doesn't look all that frail or, you know, weakened, but you can tell, you know, they got his eyes blacked out. How dare you have his eyes blacked out? But they have his eyes blacked out, and the other part of his face that you can see, you can tell he's old. But he doesn't look like a broken down 80 years old. She's this frail, little, thin thing, and he probably was throwing her all around. And why am I going to dinner with you, lunch with you, meeting you at the park, at a restaurant? I'm not meeting you anywhere. There's nothing to talk about. And I guess she figured it was safe. It was a restaurant. And literally in the restaurant, the worker said he heard, you know, heard the arguing, and he just pulled out a gun and just shot him. So he ain't kidding about going to jail. Because how much time they going to give him that he going to live out? I'm already 80. He's 79 years old. If they gave me 20 years, I'd be dead. What, I got another 5 years to live? And they not going to put me probably in the general population. They're probably going to put me someplace else. Yeah. So, unfortunately, she lost her life, you know, trusting that even in a restaurant, she was okay. And that was the heart-wrenching part, that she really thought that, you know, I'm in a safe place. You know, it's a populated area. You know, I don't have anything to worry about. I can sit down. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I'm already, you know, in the divorce, you know, proceedings. I don't have to really worry about, you know, should I divorce him or not. We've already talked about it. This is already underway. I have nothing to really be concerned about. It's not much more he can do. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And now, unfortunately, she is not living to understand that that was a very costly decision for her. So my heart really just aches for her right now, because she really trusted this punk. She really trusted him. Well, the last thing I want to talk about today was really another heart-wrenching story. So they have, and I'm sure if you look at the news or whatever, you heard this, the 46 immigrants that were found dead in a trailer truck, in a tractor trailer truck in San Antonio. And there were, I think, another 12 who had to be taken to the hospital. And they said that this has really been something that they've been concerned about happening. And back in 2017, they said they had 10, migrants who died in a truck that was parked outside of Walmart. And I vaguely remember that story. And they say in 2003, there were 19 people found in a truck in Texas. And they are really... See, here's my question. I don't understand... Let me stop, because I can't stand when people do that. They are really concerned that this is going to start surfacing again, and people are believing that they can actually travel like this across the border, and there is no risk. And they're like, with the heat alone, you know, this is not something that you want to try. And here we are. How many people are dead now? 46 people, all in the back of a truck. And you say to yourself, this is how desperate people are, that they figure, okay, oh, I'm only gotta go, you know, across this border. It's not gonna take us long. And, you know, where did they tell you they were taking you that you thought it was safe? And okay, it was 16 people, including four children who were taken to the hospital. 12 adults and 4 children. So now you don't even know how many of that 46 were children. And they are so desperate that they are getting on the back of a truck. And they said that in the back of that truck could be up to over 100 degrees. And there was no water. Those people hadn't even had water. There weren't even any water bottles. They said that the people were so hot. They were hot to the touch. Now, I've never felt somebody's body. Maybe you have. But I have never felt anybody's body that was hot to the touch. And that's who they took to the hospital. Now, can you imagine the degrees of the bodies that were found dead. Yeah. This is really bad. They say that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection reported 557 deaths in a 12-month period ending September 30th. In 12 months, 557 people were dead trying to come across the border. And my thing is, you know, don't they make you open up the trucks and stuff? Isn't that part of border control? You know, so how are you getting these trucks across the border and they don't even make you pop open the back of the truck? They all got to cross the border. You know, they all got to cross the little gate that goes up. You know, how are these people even making it that far? So I don't know. I guess this speaks for, you know, how they got to tighten up border control. Well, prayers to those families because, you know, they really thought that this was the way to go. So let's talk to our due time crew. Let's talk to our Pastor Charlene. Good morning, Pastor Charlene. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How does that sound, my love? How are you?
That's what I want to hear. That's the good morning I want to hear. How are you today?
I heard you talking about me. I'm doing good.
Yes,
I heard you talking about me. Take it out my eyes, you jumping jacks on that. Here I am.
All right now. Oh, I'm glad to have you all with me today. Thank you for joining me. You know, I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about either the guy who downloaded the explicit pictures into the people's phone on the airplane, or the fact that you shouldn't use the toilet paper in the bathroom on the plane. Which one you want to talk about today?
I wonder, well, you know I'm not technology. Shush. So I'm going to go to the bathroom.
All right now.
So I thought about not just the little people, the big men don't do it either. They pee all over. And I think everybody needs to sit down.
Now, you know
on
what?
The plane.
I am done. Well, I tell you one thing, it solved that problem.
Exactly.
That's funny, Pastor Charlene. That is funny. You have never flown before, right?
No, I have flown before. I don't like to fly, but I've been on the plane.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So you know how tight it is in there.
Yes. And small people like me have a problem because you can't turn around.
Yeah, man. It's tight up in there. Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe they should take your suggestion and everybody sit down and then nobody will have this issue. Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay, I'm going to skip over. I'm coming back to that other story. But I want to talk about, you know, this little Mexican singer, 21, who shot dead by this 79-year-old man. You know, she did all her due diligence. She had all this paperwork together. You know, she had the grounds for divorce. She wasn't leaving any stone unturned. She made sure her attorney and everybody knew, you know, why she was getting a divorce. And then she let her guard down and went out to eat with him.
Yes, he manipulated her still. She did think that she was safe in public because you would think because we're around people, it's not but so far that you can go is different when it's just one-on-one. somebody she should have talked to tell her that I didn't think that was a good idea for you to meet him. But by her being 21, you know, she's in love with this young man. And so he wasn't to tell her, you know, even though I know we're going through it, you know, I'm sorry, I still love you, and I just want to talk to you. So that's the part that she just, you know, well, all right, we'll meet. And that's how she got there. But what she did, like you said, she let her guards down. And a lot of times we do because of the fact that he's not going to do anything in public. And I've been there. You know, I've done the same thing, you know, domestic violence I've been through. And I felt that because we was in public, and I was older than 21, and I felt that because we was in public, you know, he ain't going to say but too much. But it's the look that they give you. It's that where people think that they just holding your arm when he's actually squeezing your arm. So I do understand how she was thinking as a 21-year-old. But ladies out there, and men too, goes both ways. Don't believe it. Remember we used to say, don't believe the hype? I know they don't say that no more, Shantees.
Yeah.
But.
No, and I agree with you, Pastor Charlene. You know, I have to admit that, you know, several of my instances was in public. They don't care. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
When they're out of control, when they want that control, it doesn't matter to them. And that's, like you said, had she spoken to someone, had she maybe even spoken to the attorney, you know, he would have told her, don't go. You know, had she spoken to someone else, you know, maybe who had been through it, they would have told her, don't go. That's, I agree with you. That's my advice. If you know that, you know, if this has been your experience, it doesn't matter to them. Because like I said, I can tell you how many times we were in public. And, you know, I remember there was a time we were on the train, Pastor Charlene, and he kicked me all the way home. Ain't nobody looking down. Kicked me in my shin all the way home. Nobody knew anything was going on. And you just think of how stupid, oh my God. And I'm literally saying, oh my God. I think about, they don't care, Pastor Charlotte. And like you said, they become so, they become so good at it. Like you said, they hold in your arm. You know, we even saw that in the Madea movie, you know, where they were on the dance floor and she tried to snatch away him and he grabs her back, you know, and he's threatening her, you know, very privately, you know, and she's scared for her life and they're on the dance floor. You know, it just doesn't matter. And when I read that article, my whole heart just broke because I said she really was very unassuming. He was very unassuming for her. She thought that she had done everything she was supposed to do and she was fine. And, you know, here we are. You kill this woman. You don't care nothing about going to jail, Pastor Shawnee. You already didn't live your life.
Exactly. And also, I'm not going to have you and nobody else is going to have you either. I've been there too.
Yep.
Thank the Lord I'm still
here. That's right. That's right. Because she's a 21 little petite little cute thing. And that's exactly the way he feels. He's dying. And she wants to leave him. She was probably the last little thing he knew he could get for the rest of his life. And like you said, oh, no, you ain't going to go ahead and live your life, and I'm about to die. No. Mm-mm. And he probably had a couple dollars. And, you know, no, I agree with you. That was probably another thought. Absolutely. Absolutely. And finally, we're talking about, you know, the desperation of these migrants, that they would get into these trucks. Oh, my gosh. Pastor Charlene, they're in these trucks, these tractor-trailer trucks,
thinking that they're going to make it. Oh, my gosh.
Yes. My heart goes out to them as well. I thought of desperate people do desperate things, and mm-hmm. we're so busy trying to be on the run that we don't think about anything else. So even in the mix of that, you're just thinking about getting out. You're not thinking about taking nothing with you. Or they might have said you can't take anything with you. It's not going to be that long. We're going to make stops. We're going to, even if you ask the question, but once you get in that truck and they lock that door, they are controlling you. Now, as you were saying about why nobody, you know, of them opening in the back of the truck, I thought of money talk. So they probably, by doing this a lot, they already got their people in line. They know who's going to be where, right?
That's a thought.
And so I give you money, you turn your head.
That's a thought. That's a thought. You're absolutely right. Those border control people, they can be paid off. And you're not going to tell me how these people are getting across these borders, because that's the whole purpose of border control. You know, this one is popping a trunk, but you don't have to open up a truck, really. So you're right. They're probably paying these people off. And, you know, these people are desperate to get to United States, because this is the place to be. I'm over in Mexico. We don't have a good life. You know, everybody's talking about how great it is to be in the United States, and all it's going to take. Pastor Sean, you got 46 people dead, counting to 16. So you got, 60-some-odd people in this truck breathing this limited amount of air. That's desperation for you. That's desperation. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we'll be back to chat. Let's talk to our Pastor KL. All right, Pastor KL, good morning.
Good morning, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of waters. His leaf shall not wither, but whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Good morning, Pastor Steph. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you, Pastor KL, and I can tell you're well as well. Oh, my goodness gracious. I'm glad to hear that you're doing so well today. All right, I'm going to give you the choice of talking about the man who airdrops the explicit picture onto multiple phones on the airplane. And as a traveler, you know, maybe you can speak for, had you possibly opened up this picture, the flight attendant who warns us, listen, don't use the toilet paper and don't, you know, use the bathroom on an extended use if we're still sitting in our little spot on the plane. What are we talking about this morning?
Well, let me go with the bathroom, because, you know, I'm a little fluffy. So I heard Pastor Charlotte talk about men should sit down. That's not going to happen. Not for me. First of all, you know, I don't know how many people have been on a plane, but you got to go in the bathroom sideways. You can't, you know, when you're my size, you're not walking in the bathroom. You got to shimmy yourself in there sideways and then almost back up to it. No, that's an uncomfortable situation. I'd rather hold it until I get off the plane. You talk about sit down, I might not be able to get back up. You might flush me in there. No, no, no. Forget about the toilet tissue. I'm not going.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I sure didn't think about that consideration. I didn't consider that, rather. Oh, my goodness gracious, Pastor Charlie. Pastor Charlie. Oh, my goodness, Pastor KL. You are a mess. All righty. We're talking about the 80-year-old man who publicly shoots his wife, his ex-wife to be. And, you know, I contend, you know, we talked about this last week, you know, about, you know, women who
trust these men and they don't leave and things like that. You know, she had started the process to leaving. And unfortunately, as you heard us say, you know, she thought that she was safe. And, you know, come to find out that she wasn't. And I want to talk about also the fact that he's 80. He don't care nothing about going to no jail right now. What comes to your mind when you're talking about this thing here?
Well, a lot comes to my mind from the woman's standpoint and from the man's standpoint. Let's go to the woman first. First of all, you 21 years old, and you married your grandfather. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
No.
You married your grandfather. You surpassed your father, and you went into your grandfather. And you did that because he had money, and he was saying a lot of stuff. But when you found out that this was the gift that kept on giving, he gave it until he killed you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go from the old man's standpoint. Now, here I am, the grandfather, and I know that I really can't get this young woman by myself. So now I've showered down and I've invested in you financially. And here, after I've given you my whole wallet, everything that I own, now you want to leave. Now you become tired. Now that Viagra no longer kicks in the way it's supposed to, now you're mad and you want to go somewhere else. So now I've got too much invested in it. I got homes and I probably gave you a car and I know I showered you down with clothing and stuff. And now how dare you slap me in the face? I'm a grown man. I could be your father. I could be your grandmother. And how many times we tell our children, I brought you in this world, I'll take you out. So he reborn her. He rebirthed her because apparently she wasn't living until she got with him. So he rebirthed her, so he brought her in the world. So technically, he felt that he had the right to take her out of it.
You know, I purposely, because I said, all right, I got three minds coming on to this broadcast this morning, and I'm going to stay away from certain things. And I did, and you brought out several of the things, and I said, you know, I knew between you, Pastor Charlene, and Shanti, since Pastor Ed's not with us today, that this would be some stuff that would come up. You know, he's 80 years old. I'm sure you're a little Mexican singer. There was some arrangement. Oh, yeah, there was some arrangement. And like you said, she didn't anticipate that, you know, he felt with all that he was given, he had the right to abuse her. He had the absolute right to just treat her the way he wanted to treat her because, you know, he figured he owned her. So I'm going to stop right there because I still got Shanti Sacoma, but I agree with you 100%. And unfortunately, this is what happens. This is what happens when I saw Mexican singer 21, and let me read the caption, because that gave it away for me right there. Mexican singer 21 shot dead by controlling her 79 in middle of restaurant after she tried to divorce him. That told me everything that was in this story and everything that you just got finished saying and everything Pastor Charlene said. Absolutely, Pastor K.O., absolutely. Okay. So, United States is the place to be. I'm coming here by any means necessary, which includes coming in a truck with 60 other people in a million degree weather. What are we talking about here?
I think that's totally suicide. And I'm not sure how intelligent or what country these folks were coming from. But no one thought this thing through. First of all, if you put two of us in a closet and we got to keep on dealing with the same oxygen, after a while, one of us going to die. So you put 60 people in a truck with heat. That's a bad combination. That's definitely a bad combination. I mean, listen, you might as well put us back on the boat. no one thought that thing out. All they saw was the flag on the other side in their mind. That's all they saw. You know, they wanted to get out of where they were, but seemingly they were in a better place than their travelers. And no one, the driver, the no one cared about that. So now you got all these dead folks on your hands. No one thought this thing out. This could not have been the journey to freedom. This could not have been it. That was suicide to me.
I agree. Because I'm going to tell you something. That's why I keep saying, you know, desperate. Pastor Charlotte says, you know, desperate people do desperate things. And she's right. You know, but desperation is just a bit much, because I can't imagine. Listen, Pastor Taya, I'm not getting in a two-door car ever again. It's just too claustrophobic for me. And not only that, because I only got one speed. And if we need to move fast, I ain't getting out of the front of the car too quickly. Now I got to get out of the back of the car, which means I got to wait for you to get out, pull the seat up, and then I get out the back. that ain't happening. So I can't even, I'm serious, Pastor Kale. That's the first thing I thought about. I'm like, wait a minute, there were 60 dumb people in this truck. If I'm in the back of the truck, that means that when you finally open up this door, I might be the last one to get off the truck. And I'm thinking about all of us just in here inhaling this same air. That's why I said, once you close that door, 60 people breathing the same air. No. Like you said, in a closet.
And don't let somebody bust out into a song. No, you can't sing today. No song.
Right, because you know we always see the movies where somebody's buried alive and then they go
right
because they're trying not to breathe, you know, too deeply,
right.
you know so it's these are the type of things you have to think about. And that's why I said, you know, a minute ago, how long was this ride supposed to be? What did they tell you? Because I can't imagine. Let me save this for Shanti. But you know, you're absolutely right. You know, this was not a well thought. And you know me and my planning. This was not a plan, Pastor Kale. I agree. This is not a plan. And unfortunately, you know, this is the desperation of. To answer your question, they were coming from Mexico, and this is how bad they feel Mexico is, that they're going to get in the truck, and they're coming over here. So, thank you so much for joining us.
They should have built a wall.
Yeah, they should climb up. Listen, if it's 60 of y'all, maybe y'all can climb on one another's shoulder or something and get across the wall.
Right, right.
Maybe that'd be a little better option than try to make it here in a truck. Oh my goodness. And I'll talk to you in a little bit, Pastor KL. I'll talk to you a little bit. Oh, my goodness. Let's say good morning to Shanti. Good morning, Shanti.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well. Glad to hear you're doing well. Listen, I talked about my first story was the Subway employees out in Atlanta, 26 and 24, who were there doing their little job, you know, maybe going to college, you know, maybe, you know, that's their little, you know, hustle money. And the man comes into the restaurant, a man who they had seen before. He was not a first-time customer without incident before. But this time he comes in, somebody puts too much mayonnaise on his sandwich, and he shoots one of them dead, and he shoots the other one. And she, you know, takes her to the hospital. She actually makes it. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, you're young and you're getting your little hustle on, and, you know, you just don't think about, you know, somebody coming in and shooting you, you know, over a sandwich that's not made properly. And I just wanted to talk to you as a younger individual, you know, what comes to your mind? You know, we talked about, you know, when you used to say Tamaja was working in Compton, you know, in the Compton branch of McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, the dangers that lurk. And we have no idea as young people, you know, when you're just honestly just trying to get your little job going, to put a little money in your pocket,
What's your thought?
Yeah, it's really sad because you shouldn't have to concern yourself with that. But unfortunately, now you have to pay attention to everything. You have to pay attention to the clientele, what type of people going in. And one of the things I hated about Tamasia working at that particular McDonald's is that was like the hangout spot for like the worst type of people. So already you had bad people and good people coming in to patronize the McDonald's. But then you had the slums just sitting around in there. So if I actually ate McDonald's and wanted some, as soon as I opened the door and saw that sitting there, I wouldn't go in. I'd have to just wait or look for another McDonald's. So unfortunately, even as a young person who wants to work somewhere like that, you have to pay attention to the type of people who hang out there, the type of people who go there, because you're not going to be able to always weed out, you know, but you have to pay attention to those kind of things. And, you know, unfortunately for them, they were the ones who received, you know, that from the ignorance for mayonnaise. It's like,
yeah.
But you have to pay attention now to the location, to the, you know, and it's just like, you couldn't pay me to work in Brooklyn. I've never liked Brooklyn. You know, it doesn't mean that things don't happen in Queens. But I would just not go to Brooklyn. It's, for me, I don't like the aura of a lot of the people who are out there, especially certain parts of Brooklyn. So you have to pay attention to that. You know, even though it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm only working at a Subway's or McDonald's or a Taco Bell or a Domino's. But you have to pay attention to that now. And a lot of those places are in neighborhoods. You know, so now it's like you have to scout the neighborhood before you even go to apply at those stores.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they say that this particular Subway, you know how we travel a lot, and they said that this particular Subway was connected to a gas station and another, like a couple stores, you know, not like one of those, the strip malls, but there were another couple of stores and the gas station. And they said that, like, again, they had seen him. He wasn't new. Without incident, he had come in, and they felt that it was safe to serve at least him. And here you are now. You don't even make it home, you know.
Right.
When you're going to work trying to get a couple of dollars in your pocket. And like I said, even now,
right,
talking about it again, like, my heart is, like, bleeding. I have tears in my eyes because I'm like, all they did was just go to work. That's all they did was go to work. Oh, my goodness. All right. So we're talking about this this Mexican singer, Lil Hotty Totty, 21, and this 80-year-old man who she married. And, you know, now he's abusing her, and she wants a divorce. And she meets him at the restaurant. He shoots her dead. What comes to your mind when you hear, you know, Pastor Charlene brought up the things that she thought, Pastor KL, what comes to your mind?
There's no way you qualify for AARP when you're abusing me. That's like the first thing. There's no way. How are you hitting me? Do you know you're old, mister? And you know, like, you're my husband, and I gotta call you mister. No, you're not hitting me. Like, I can't even take you serious. You try to act like you're that upset, you know. And unfortunately, I mean, I could not see at 21, at 36, I ain't dating nobody who's past a certain age. So at 21, my mind just goes to, I think it's really safe to say you had a lot of ulterior motives with dealing with this person, with marrying this person, and it could have came to bite you in the behind. Because at 21, how are you dating someone that old? And there'd be genuine feeling, because the first thing I'm thinking is, how long we got until you die? So I'm sitting to invest all this love into you, mister, whatever your name is, and you gonna be dead? Like, no. Like let's talk real. You know what I'm saying? Like, how attractive were you at 80 years old? It's, see, all this stuff just goes. I'm serious. And there are some exceptions. There are some, you know, my brother, he works out. He's pretty much like a bodybuilder, and he showed me there's, like, this guy that he trains with, and I think the guy's in his 50s, and you would never know he's, you know, in his 50s because of the way he's built. And once he was telling me, you know, how the women were chasing him and stuff, and then he showed me a video of him working out, I was like, okay, now it makes sense. But he was in his 50s. I don't see nobody 80 looking like that. And, you know, Christian or not, like, let's just be real. No. And I'm 21. Like, I'm just now able to go and buy a bottle of liquor by myself. I'm not tying myself down to you, Mr. Sir. Unless I see what I can get out of you before you die. Well, unfortunately, it just came to, you know, but now I don't know how you stay with the abuse. You know, maybe you got some serious, you know, self-esteem issues while you was trying to get the money or trying to get your name on the will or however that went. But, yeah, no, I really don't see how that was a plan on her end. Or his, but you know, we're talking about her. You know how that was a plan on her end.
Well, that's the thought. You know, that you had some ulterior motive. Ain't no way in the world you married somebody 80. You know, first of all, they said she was a Mexican singer. So think about the 46 people that we're about to talk about. She didn't have to. Maybe he, check this out. Maybe he went over to Mexico, and maybe she had considered getting on that truck. But now I ain't got to get on that truck. I ain't got to climb that wall. That I just found me a sugar daddy. So now I'm finding me. You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying the same thing. All said was in my head. I'm like, okay, 21? You know, it ain't a whole lot of love going on there. And no 21 years old. For 80
I
years
can't
old
stop calling you Mr. You're 80. How am I marrying you and you're Mr. So-and-so? Like, how does this work?
oh my goodness. Well, let's talk about the 46 migrants who died, you know, on the way here. You know, we talked about the fact that they're in this closed-up space. You know, what are the things that come to your mind when somebody says, hey, there's a way? Because you know they didn't do this for free either. So you didn't make this. These people and the majority of them didn't even make it alive. Okay.
I think they got them for their money. I think they could have made a couple more trips. And I know, you know, I've watched movies and stuff of them smuggling, you know, people from Mexico into Texas and you know wherever else, and it's a very risky trip. Very risky trip. I'm just thinking about how I don't like being close to people like that physically, you know, and you touching me and you sweat and now your sweat touch my sweat. Now, see, I don't know that he died there. So I don't know how. I don't know that he died there. I don't know. Now, I know I was born here and raised here, so it is easier for me to say that's just the trip I would have to decline unless there's only about maybe just me, my family, another family. But it's that's some real desperation. That's some real, because like, again, like I said, it's already risky. Because I've watched how they've gotten stopped, you know, during the transport. You know, some they've been caught, you know. So I get it, but I'm just thinking about how I would have just ruined the trip for everybody with my phobias, and everybody would have been disappointed in me. They'd have probably killed me and left me back in Mexico already. I'm like, wait, y'all ain't got no alcohol or nothing. So this wasn't planned at all. So no, there's no mask. Nobody punched no holes in the side of this van or truck or whatever we in. So we could have been sucking the air from outside like we just in here. No. Mm-mm. There's no type of plan at all. I didn't know they passed. This is just not wild.
Yeah, it was 16 who went to the hospital, including 4 children, and 46 perished on, you know, while the trip took place. So, unfortunately, that's the fate. All right, so thank you for joining us. Hold on.
Pastor Seth.
Yes.
Pastor Seth, you know, Shantice just made, you know, a good thing. You know, she brought something to my memory. She said there was no alcohol or nothing. Now think about it. If it was black people, we didn't have no fried chicken and no Reynolds wrap. We didn't have no drinks and no Reynolds wrap to keep us going. We just got on the truck with nothing. You know, we go to our play land. We're going to wrap up some chicken. We're going to do something. I just caught on to that. I'm like, wait a minute. We had no bottled water wrapped up in no Reynolds wrap. You know, Reynolds wrap kept everything cold and kept everything warm. I just don't understand. That was poor planning. Them Mexicans, yep. Boy, them Mexicans. They got to do better.
Potato salad with some pepperaca.
For real.
It's so true. It's so true. You know, it's funny. I was talking to Auntie Pam the other day, and we were talking about when we used to go to, you know, the different trips with the church and, you know, how, you know, she used to send us for her candy stash. And, you know, like Pastor KL said, there's always a plan when we're making a trip. You know, we got to have, you know, our stuff, our bags, and we just don't move without food. It's just not happening. So, you know, but Pastor KL, again, in their defense, chewing would have taken up more, oxygen. You know,
it had a chew.
We would have had to leave that stuff back because that may have gotten us down another mile. You know, so
they didn't have no pastelas or cuchifritos or nothing.
About that either, you know, we just don't move without food. It just don't happen. And you know, but like I said, you know, in their defense, that meant a little more oxygen would have been taken up just for the chewing and sucking on that straw, that bottle of water, and we can't risk that. So, unfortunately, you know, they had to leave the food behind. So I want to talk. Mm-hmm. This is my church folk story today. You know, we just found out we're siblings, but we're still dating. And, you know, that was the caption. And it was about these two women who have been dating for 2 years. And they just found out that their moms, Carly and Mercedes' mom, dated the same man, had relations with the same man. So they're possibly sisters. And they put out on TikTok, you know, should we get a DNA test? And, you know, it's like everybody was like, this is a no-brainer. Why are we even asking this question? And, you know, I always end up equating this stuff to those of us who are Christians. And, you know, this is the sign of the deterioration. You know, as Pastor Kim always says, you know, this is our time. You know, we know the world's come to an end. You know, when we got a question as to whether we should date our siblings, you know, maybe, like I said, they thought because, you know, they're not a man and a woman that they can't make kids, so they don't have that risk that they're running. But, you know, what do you think about, you know, our Christian people where things are just, our church folks, where things are just so blatant, but people question? It's like, yo, the writing is on the wall here, and you still trying to figure out what you should do? And I talked to, you know, you pastors about this because people really don't understand some of the stuff that people talk to us about. And it's like, you got to still work that one out. Pastor Charlene, you know, last week we talked about, you know, the women who were waiting for Boaz and, you know, how you had to tell them, you know, hey, I'm sorry, you got to rethink this thing. But what other things come to your mind when you really, really have to scratch your head trying to figure out why is this a dilemma for you?
Well, a lot of times, let me see, let me think of one incident. It's really bringing me back to one that we just talked about of being in love with somebody else's spouse. And with as women, I love him, but I can't stop loving him, even though I know that he's with somebody else. Okay, so when do you wake up from out of this dream, you know, and when you was just talking about these two ladies that don't want to, they have to question it. It's like you don't want to accept the truth. Is that what it is? Is it, you know, is it where that you get to the place where that I'm so selfish in myself to where that what God is saying that we forget, but we still want to say, for God I live and for God I die. So if you can see it plainly, as they say, the writing on the wall, where do we get to the place that things don't need to be questioned? You don't have to ask somebody that. It's just common sense. So what I usually say to them, take yourself out of the equation. That's what you need to do. Now, what would you say to me? What would you say to me if I came to you and told you what you're telling me? And a lot of times I will take a situation and don't put them in it, similar to them, and then tell them, so what should I tell this person? And they always will tell you what they should tell somebody else, but you're not living what you just said.
Absolutely. 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 They can't take their own advice. Absolutely. What? I'm coming back to you, Pastor Charlene, you know, because we got some time, and I purposely left this for our last moment here for this morning. But I'm coming back, so please think of another time where you really looking at them scratching your head saying, you really got to work this one out? Good one, Pastor Charlene. Pastor KL, you know, what's a dilemma that, you know, us church folk go through, and you're like, how did we get here where you can't work this thing out? What comes to your head?
Well, I mean, what comes to my head is this story within itself. I mean, you already can't make right decisions according to the word because you're in this LMNOP community. You know, so you've already decided that this is what you're going to do. So that's why you're so frustrated and trying to figure out, well, can we really date? Well, you ain't even supposed to be dating, first of all, whether you are family or not. So you're already confused. Now you're trying to make confusion right. You know, so now you're saying, okay, we can date, but we never got to the crack of the problem. The crack of the problem is that you two women shouldn't be together. That's the problem. How about we address that first? And once we address that, then we know we can date. See, we want to cover up sin, you know, with a good scripture or something that we can kind of turn around and give our own revelation to it. But you can't cover up sin. Listen, sin is like light in the darkness. It's going to expose you all the time.
Absolutely, absolutely. A good point, because that's the first thing I thought about when I read it. I'm like, well, you know, if you go with what the Bible says, you know, you shouldn't even be together. And now you trying to figure out if you should date, you know, maybe this was God's way of you know, just kind of displaying, you know, how wrong this is from the beginning and helping you to get the out. And here you still won't take the out. And I want you to think about that one too, Pastor Charlene and Pastor Kale. When I come back around, you still won't take the out God is giving you. And that's what I thought about. I thought about the same thing you thought about, Pastor Kim. I'm like, well, you ain't supposed to be together, no way. And here, maybe God is kind of moving this thing in a direction to give you that nudge out. Now, you still can't work this out? Good point. Good point, Pastor KL. Come on, Shantis. What you got? What about the time with church folk? You like, you still can't figure this one out? Why? Yes. The writing's on the wall.
I remember a conversation I had with someone about their job, and it was just about how they were supposed to handle a situation on their job. Like, I think they had to go talk to a supervisor or something, and they wanted to do it one way. And I was like, okay, but that's not making any sense. And the way you're saying is going to have you go in this whole circle. Well, no, you got to do, like, you have the seniority, you have the credentials, just go up and say this. Well, no, because, you know, it just makes sense for me to go. And I'm like, why are you taking yourself through unnecessary steps? Like, all you got to do is go straight, but you want to go through the maze. Why? But you know what? Just talking to you and sending me through a maze. So we're just going to end this conversation, and that's it. But they, like, people just like to take themselves through unnecessary steps. I think for people, it's like it makes them feel like they're actually doing something, but then you're not doing anything. When God is like, he's cleared the way and gave you a straight path to go from A to Z, bam, in one step. But you want to go through A, B, C, D, E, F. And it's like, is it so that you can say you did something? Because you're taking yourself through all these steps. It's not going to give you the ability to say, I did something. It gives you ability to say, I went through all these steps, and by the time I got to Z, the opportunity wasn't here anymore. Or, you know, it's too late, or it just didn't make any sense, and I still have to go the way God said. So I did all this running around for nothing. It's just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. You think about how many times that God gives us, you know, that detour, and we just keep on going into the dead end. Amazing, amazing. Good one, good one. Pastor Charlotte, you know, we're talking about, you know, God has nudged you in the direction, given you the out, and now you just can't take the out. You won't take the out. He's trying to help you save you, but you won't help you save you. What are we talking about here?
About being in the relationship where it's toxic. I said the word right?
Toxic.
Okay. And you know that. But you talk about that you want to get out, and he's giving you different ways of how you can walk away from this. But you... I love him so I'm going to stay there. And where that you know that he might not be putting his hands on you, as you're saying, he's not putting his hands on me, but he's abusive of, you know, of his language. I'll say it that way. Abusive of his language. And the Lord has keep telling you and nudging you and telling you that this person is not for you, but you want to stay. That I don't understand that as well. And where that you know that people have talked to you and tell you, it starts off by the language. Then the next, if he hits you, he says he's not going to do it again. But you still stay. Are you waiting to get totally beat down? And that's the issue. And once again, not just on a woman's side, there have been men who have been abused as well.
And
the Lord
shows
you to come out.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this, not cutting you off, but I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. As a person who's been in an abusive mm-hmm. relationship, and we've talked very openly about how mm-hmm. we've
We didn't meet the first time. We meet the second time. You know, what made you stay? You know, we talk about how the, you know, the writing's on the wall, God gives you the out, you don't take the out. You know, here's where I want to shift this thing. Because as when I was 18, you know, a kid or whatever, I wasn't a Christian person. Now, as a Christian person, I know what I know. You couldn't pay me to stay in an abusive relationship. We would have to separate, and God would have to do something with you majorly in order for me to even consider, you know, something like that, because that's like saying God could not change a person. However, you know, you were not in the Lord at the time when you were going through this abusive relationship. But we as Christian people, you know, that's one of the biggest issues. You know, you're told to stick it out, and you're told that, you know, it'll change. If you stay there, it'll change. And is it possible that the Christian mind says that, yes, because he's not physically abusing me, you know, it's not as bad. And, you know, now, you know, they may have to wait till it gets worse, because in their head, you know, this is my Christian marriage, and, you know, God wouldn't do that. Or, you know, well, what's your thought on that part of it? You didn't leave, so now maybe they're using God. You know, this is a Christian marriage. Maybe they're using God that, you know, keeps them, quote, unquote, in this thing here.
Yes. Even with that, though, you are, it's in your, how would you say, your mind, your mindset is where that when you are abused, that's where it starts from. Most of the times it starts in the mind before it becomes physical. Even though that you know Christ, and I'm talking about leadership when I'm saying this. I'm not talking about just, then you know, a congregant. I'm talking about in leadership. But you get up and you're preaching. Okay? Mm. So I'm saying that when you get to this place, you know, you're showing face that nothing is wrong, but you're being mentally abused when you leave, you know, or I call you in the office, or, you know what I mean? So where's the part that you, God sees it all. That's, I always say that first. Always say, we know God sees it all. He hears all. He knows all. So when your whole demeanor changes when you know that there's an episode, right? So even in the Christian life, because they say, somebody had did a survey one time that I heard, that it's more abuse in the church house than it is outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe it because, well, this was like years ago as well, and I couldn't believe it because you would never think. And the pulpit.
I believe it.
So,
so,
well, I believe it now because I've heard it, you know, and people confide in it a little more so. But why are you, and that is my question of why are you still, but they stay because they don't want that divorce where that the people will have something to say.
Stigma. Right, right. They don't want that stigma.
You know what I mean?
Of divorce, you know, a public divorce, and you're, you know, it's supposed to leave ministry. I definitely agree. All right, good one. Thank you. Pastor K.L., we're talking about God giving you an out, and you're not taking it. It's right there. Walk through the door. What happens to us?
You know, and I think the biggest problem with that is that not only does God give an out, he answers a prayer. Because how many times you go into your little closet because you're hurt so much and say, God, just get me out of this. And then when he shows you a way to get out of it, you too scared to leave. Listen, if you don't believe God can do it, stop praying. You know what I mean? And if you're going to pray, believe that God can do it. You know, a lot of times we keep on asking for the way of escape, for the ram in the bush. And then when it appears, because it came at a moment when we didn't think it was going to come, sometimes we just ask for stuff and don't believe that we can get it. And then when we get it, we won't take it. So we stay because our mindset is, I know what I got, but I don't know what I'm going to get. So if I leave him or if I leave her, I might get something worse. Is it really me? Am I the one? God, you might need to change me because maybe I'm the reason why he's abusing me. Maybe I keep on doing the wrong thing. You know, we start making excuses for why we're in this situation. And maybe, Lord, let me do better. It ain't about you. He or she is who they are. And, you know, just like Pastor Charlene said, you know, we won't get divorced because we don't want to stain our name. That's the biggest thing. So here I am getting abused, and here I am taking it on the inside, behind closed doors. I'm coming to church wearing the mask, and I'm preaching through my hurt. But I won't get out of this thing because I don't want to stain my name. You've already been stained.
Absolutely. And as Pastor Charlene's personality is shifted. So you, how much ministry is going on when people are seeing all
of
this?
How effective is your ministry?
That's right. When you're not even the same person anymore, because I don't care what anybody says, abuse changes you. Ain't no way in the world you still at it 100% in an abusive situation. I don't care what anybody says. Because when we're going through something, it doesn't even matter. Abuse. It doesn't have to be abuse. It takes our ministry. We're not the same. We're not making the same amount of phone calls. We're not praying with people as much. You know, no, it's a breakdown. It breaks you down. So you two are absolutely right. Absolutely right. How effective is your ministry? And you're trying to save face. You know, so now, is God really getting the glory? Nah. All right. Good stuff. Come on, Shantice. You know, we're talking about the writing is right here. You got the out. You just got finished saying. You know, you got the straight way, but you want to go through the maze. You know, what can you talk about that helps someone understand the point we're trying to get that's going on right in the church?
Yes, and I'll throw myself in there because that's exactly what happened with me. I don't remember praying on it directly initially. I remember just probably like, you know, saying to God, like, God, you just show me. Am I supposed to be with this person? Am I supposed to do that? And God showed. And then, you know, I'd say whatever I say, and then somehow I end up right back there. And then it's like you ask yourself, your infamous question type of stuff, well, how did I get here? But you still keep bringing yourself right back. And a lot of it comes to you start getting in the habit of when you allow people to do things to you so much, you start to do it to yourself. And now you become hooked to that. So even though God is giving you the desire to want to be pulled away from it, and it's like all the bells and whistles, and it's like, hello, all of the obvious is right here as to why you need to walk away and how you can walk away, but you still running back to it, and you have to, outside of God, only you know, or you're going to have to understand why, even though he's giving you, you know, because he's not going to talk unclear. He's going to show you, especially like Pascal said, if you ask, whether through prayer or just talking to him, he's going to show you. Whether, why is it that you continue to take the step back to say, nah, I'm going to just try it again. I'm going to just do this. I'm going to see what's going to happen. And he's just sitting there like, okay, let's try it again. Hello, bells and whistles right here. What's going on? And when you finally wake up and you take it, and then you look back and you're like, wow, did I really ignore this same sign
Or did I really close the same door you opened, God, 50 times before? But you have to be able to determine why you keep, you know, stepping back into that, even though God is, like, pulling you out with so many things, so many outs, but you just choose to keep going back in.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, unfortunately, this seems to be, you know, our thing. And I really hope that the listeners are paying attention to this here. Thank you so much, my panel, and I pray that you have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You. Just thanks.
Thank you. All right. Let me get this benediction in. To him who loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood and made us a kingdom, priest to his God and Father, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Revelation 1, 5, and 6. You know, it's an interesting angle, you know, that God is making a slight shift. And we need to really pay attention to this news. And for the last few weeks, I've been pushing the part of this church folk just a little bit to the back, a little bit more than I have in the past, because God, the news is what God wants us to pay attention to. And we're going to start doing something next week. God spares. We're going to start focusing on something a little different next week, in the beginning of the month. And but you know, we're twisting, you know, and I see how God is shifting, you know, because again, I think one of the things that we have a huge breakdown with is how God's people handle the same issues. Faith issues this world is facing, you know, we're in this world. Are we handling things the same way? And that's why the church folk has shifted a little bit, you know, much different than we have done it in the past. And because a lot of people are really not making, I talked about this yesterday, a lot of people are not making that distinction between us and them. We are really not shining the way we need to shine. We're really not shining because there's a breakdown, just like we just got finished talking about today. You know, here we are. We have two young ladies who, to me, when y'all looked at one another, y'all didn't see how much you looked alike. Now, it may turn out that they're not literally sisters, half sisters or full sisters, but the fact of the matter is something, there's a flag, and it goes back to what was said, you know, with Pastor K.L. It's something that I thought about myself. I'm like, well, God is might be just nudging you, you know, okay, so since you didn't get that, get this. And that's what God does with us. You know, he doesn't leave us alone. He doesn't let us alone. He doesn't just drop the ball. Until he gets to a point where he's like, okay, I need to teach you. I need to show you a lesson, or I'm going to make this happen, or I'm going to let you walk into this here. You know, we have to think about this stuff. And again, I'm noticing because, you know, when the shift starts taking place, sometimes I don't always get it. And sometimes when the shift takes place, I get it instantaneously. And I'm seeing more and more. And again, we talked about this yesterday, you know, and a lot of you missed that opening yesterday, you know, where what is happening to us as Christian people, what is happening to us as people who declare that we are God's people? Are people seeing God in us? And the answer is a resounding no. No. You know, all, you know, you talked about 60-something people coming here desperate.
so desperate that there's not a plan? Does God speak about planning in his Bible? Absolutely. In his word, absolutely. Who plans to build a house without counting up the cost? Anything we go through in this life is in that word. Anything we go through. So no matter what new story we bring here, there is a way that God has already said his people should address the matter. Already. When we're disgruntled about something, how should we approach the matter? That was the Subway issue. You know, the man goes in there to put too much mayonnaise on it. Clearly, it was not a mayonnaise issue. Is that what we're doing? Is that how we're handling life? Are we, instead of targeting the issue, are we shooting at the wrong people? Are we shooting at the wrong target? This is what he said. We're talking about marrying with an ulterior motive. What are we doing? How are we Christians moving, or people who claim that they are of God, how are we moving the same way? What are we doing in our life that we don't really approach the matter the way we should, or approach this issue, excuse me, the way we should, but there's an ulterior motive in our pocket? God addresses that in his word. That is not the way we're supposed to handle things. I could pull out each and every one of these stories, every one of these stories, and put it into a church folk issue. A church folk issue, every one of the stories. And that's what God is really sending that message. God is saying, you know what? I see what you're doing on an everyday basis. Now I'm giving you 2 hours in the morning to address, if not directly, conceptually, your issue. Are you extracting what I need for you to call out to change your life? Are you that serious about me that you hear me regardless of where I'm coming from, regardless of what avenue I'm coming around, coming down, regardless of what color I am, regardless of what day of the week it is, regardless of what time of the day I'm speaking, regardless of who I'm speaking to? Are you hearing me? Or are you so sucked up in where you are, what you're doing, and where you're trying to get to that you don't hear me? But I'm still coming for you. I have not stopped yet. I have not stopped yet. I'm still coming for your life. I'm coming through your children. I'm coming through your job. I'm coming through your pastor. I'm coming through your mama. I'm coming through your spouse. I'm coming through the dog. I'm coming through the trees. I'm coming through the radio. I'm coming through the airwaves. I'm coming every single angle. But are you hearing me? Are you seeing me? Do you really have me in the forefront of your life, that regardless of which way I come, you're going to hear or see me? You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew who always comes through big time. Pay attention to what they're saying. Just might change your life. Thank you for hanging out with us today, and we praise God for who you are because you help us do what we do. Please do not miss this opportunity to accept Jesus as your personal Savior or tighten that relationship with him. Later is not promised to us. Until tomorrow, God spares our life when it's Wild Wednesday. I love you.